Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. We're glad that you've tuned in to the program today. For those of you who perhaps weren't tuned in last week, we started a discussion about global warming, looking at some of the effects of global warming and what's been in the news. In our program today, we're going to look a little bit more specifics about our lifestyle choices and how it affects global warming around us.
Of course, in our second half program, Paul will be looking at the Millennium of Prophecy with Doug Batchelor.
As well, we'll be sharing an amazing fact in our first half of the program.
But as usual, we have our health lines and lifelines production, and this one is called Adding Some Fruit and Vegetables to Your Diet, Paul.
Which ties in very nicely to our discussion that we'll be having in our first half hour. But first, I'd like to play for you a selection by Michael Card, and the song is entitled Heal Our Land.
And I will heal there. if you often eat on the run, you don't have to skimp on the fruits and veggies. This is Dr. Elmar Sakala for Lifelines. With a little planning, it doesn't take too much time to incorporate more fruits and veggies into your meals. Keep fruits, such as fresh berries or bananas, in the house, which can be great toppers for your cereal or yogurt during breakfast. When eating out, order vegetable sides, such as corn, green beans, or baked beans, instead of French fries. Add extra tomatoes, peppers, or other vegetables into your sandwich. Try a fruit smoothie for an energy booster rather than coffee or soda. For dessert, choose fresh fruit for a refreshing, sweet treat.
Lifelines, a public service of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, provides practical answers to common health questions. For more free health tips, call 877-LIFE-TIPS or visit vibrantlife.org.
And as our Lifeline says, we are to try to incorporate more fruits and vegetables in our diet. And as stewards of the earth, as we're called to be, we'll find out in our program today at how inefficient we actually are at being stewards of our planet, and how inefficient we are when it comes to diet and how we contribute to greenhouse gases. Millennia, people believed Aristotle when he said that the heavier an object, the faster it would fall to Earth. But in 1589, Galileo, as the story goes, summoned Aristotelian university professors to the base of the Tower of Pisa. He took two objects weighing 10 pounds and 1 pound respectively to the top of the tower and dropped them simultaneously. Both landed at the same time. Yet, so committed were those learned men to their presuppositions and to their reputations that they denied what they had seen. People who are set in their ways or don't want to recognize facts still exist with us today. It's not something just in the past. The Cattlemen's Association is quoted as saying the evidence of global warming has been inconclusive at best. Whether there exists a warming trend is unclear. Now, an interesting quote taken from a group of scientists, which was published in the Washington Post, says global warming has emerged as the most serious environmental threat of the 21st century. Only by taking action now can we ensure that future generations will not be put at risk. And that's a letter to the president from 49 Nobel Prize-winning scientists. So even though truth seems to be out there, there are many, whether it's people or associations, who do not want to recognize the facts. Global warming, or climate change, is generated because of certain atmospheric gases. The biggest culprits are carbon dioxide and methane. To a lesser degree, we see CFCs and ozone as well. It is true that these gases must be found in the atmosphere, but in a balanced environment. It's when we start to introduce an excessive amount of these certain gases that attributes to a greenhouse effect in which too much heat is trapped in the atmosphere. I came across an interesting quote, though, that puts CO2 and methane in an interesting perspective. And this is taken from the Journal of Geophysical Research. It says, one of the most potent gases, greenhouse gases destabilizing the planet, is methane. It is some 24 times more potent a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, and its concentration in the atmosphere has been rising faster by about 1% per year for the last 50 years. I came across another interesting quote that says that 15 to 20% of the greenhouse gas, the methane in the environment, is due to animal husbandry, raising cattle and different other animals for feed. I came across a quote from the New York Times dated December 27th of 2006 that used the figure of 18%. 18% of our greenhouse gas production originates from the raising of livestock.
Yes, Paul, and the same article also carries that, you know, we're going to look at more in this detail, but global livestock grazing and feed production uses 30% of the land surface of the planet. That's a lot, just for that. And as the population, human population is growing, so naturally we're going to see an increase in livestock. Actually, the figure is, as this past year, 1.5 billion cattle and domestic buffalo and about 1.7 billion sheep and goats is what they're looking per year.
So we're not only trying to provide water and food for the human race upon Earth, we have to provide and sustain, you know, cattle and, you know, grazing stock for basically food consumption, you know, for the sort of insatiable desire that people have for meat. And we want to look at the in the program today to find out what does that have effect on us environmentally. How does that contribute to our greenhouse gases? In that quote there from the Journal of Geophysical Research, methane is 24 times more potent than CO2, and that the bulk of that methane is coming from raising of animals, whether it's from manure or through the digestion process.
Yes, and you know, so I thought, what can we do about that, Paul? Do we, can we individually have any way that we can actually reduce some of this waste? Everywhere today we talk about recycling at home, you know, and being conscious and environmentally aware how we as individual citizen can contribute in improving things. And, you know, we discovered this 10 years ago about smoking, the secondhand smoking, how bad it is, and we have now governments in various countries have put in place laws that will actually protect people, those who did not smoke, with these rules, you know, so it's, people are protected. But the one thing is that people don't realize there is one thing that they have missed in sharing, and that does our diet have an effect on our environment, Paul? You know, what we consume, what we eat day by day, is there a fact that we, without realizing, that has an effect on the environment that we live in?
Yeah. We look at that social effect or the effect amongst other people by secondhand smoke, but there's actual a similar effect by meat consumption in the diet as to how it affects other people. And, you know, global warming is one of those issues.
And I thought we can start out by reading a look at the Creation Week, actually. God gives us, you know, a wise decision on what we should eat and why. And we're going to look into that. In Genesis 1, in 29-30, we read, "And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat." And it was so.
You know, God's original diet was a vegetarian diet. The diet of the world today is much different. The Western diet has been very high in meat consumption, and we see that meat consumption being translated into the other developing countries around the world. We see meat consumption in countries as China and other countries in the East greatly increasing now. You know, meat consumption is sort of associated with sort of effluency in the, you know, in a culture. The worldwide meat consumption from 1950 to 1990 increased by 300%. Now, when meat consumption goes up, everything that goes into sustaining that grazing stock or livestock goes up as well. And we're going to look at these now. If here's an interesting fact for you. If the whole and if the entire world's population became meat eaters, the grain needed to feed a world population of meat eaters would equal 150% more than all the current global grain production used for all purposes. Because grain is used for human consumption. Grain is used for feedstock for animals. Grains, corns are used for oil production now, you know, in ethanol. We're using it as a fuel to burn. So we would have to increase our grain production by 150% above what we are doing now if the whole world became a meat-eating population because of the great inefficiency of using meat as a food source. In the world right now, livestock consumes 630 million tons of grain around the world. That's a lot of grain.
Yes.
If meat consumption was cut by just 10%, that would mean there's 63 tons of grain that could be used for human consumption as opposed to animal consumption. And by just cutting meat consumption by 10%, we would be able to feed the growth in world population for almost 2 years. So by cutting meat consumption by 10% would free up enough grain to feed the world's population for 2 years. So that goes to show how inefficient, you know, meat for consumption, is. Now we want to look at some of the, statistics here of land use. I came across an interesting quote from World Watch out of Washington, D.C., and they say that for every hamburger patty that is eaten at a fast food restaurant requires 55 square feet of land to produce one hamburger patty. So just imagine 55 square feet of grain is used to feed the cattle to provide one hamburger patty. That's tremendously inefficient. When it comes to feeding of animals, it requires 6.9 pounds of grain feed to produce 1 pound of pork. Now, 1 pound of pork, you know, would feed, say, a family of four for one meal. How far would 6.9 pounds of grain go to feed a number of people? You can make an awful lot with 6.9 pounds of grain.
Yeah.
It takes 4.9 pounds of feed to produce 1 pound of beef, 2.8 pounds of feed to produce 1 pound of chicken. So the numbers are rather staggering when it compares to how far you can spread, you know, grain as feed, you know, for human consumption as opposed to, using that, trying to convert that into meat for consumption in the diet.
And we're not just looking at, here we're just looking at numbers, but, nutrition value and other things we're going to go in later.
Yeah.
You know, how much do you get out of that? Because you're eating secondhand. You're eating, say, meat that has been for growth of the cow. And we're going to look at some of that as well. Now, besides from, you know, grain, we also look at water. That's a big issue too, you know. All this requires a lot of water. And I just have some data here, if you'd like me to share.
Sure, yeah.
And it's just similar ideas that you looked at the feed here. It says water required to produce 1 pound of California foods, and this is taken from the Soil and Water Specialist University of California Agriculture Extension, and it says 1 pound lettuce requires 23 gallons of water, 1 pound of tomatoes 24 gallons, 1 pound of wheat 25 gallons, 1 pound of carrots 33 gallons, 1 pound of apples 49 gallons, and how here we go, 1 pound chicken 815 gallons. 1 pound of pork, 1,630 gallons. And the last ball, 1 pound of beef, 5,214 gallons of water just to produce 1 pound of beef compared to, say, 1 pound of tomatoes, 24 gallons. That's amazing.
And, you know, worldwide, we talk about water shortages. Yet, you know, the greatest consumption of water is going to livestock to produce, you know, meat as a food source, as opposed to using that as, you know, using it as a water source for vegetation that we eat, whether it's, you know, tomatoes or apples or any kinds of fruits and vegetables.
And you always hear this, you know, especially from California. Oh, it's dry. And it says, you know, it's interesting quote from Cadillac Desert by Mark Reisner. He says, in California, the single biggest consumer of water is not Los Angeles. It is not the oil and chemicals or defense industries, nor it is the field of grapes and tomatoes. It is irrigated pastures, grass grown in near desert climate for cows. You know?
So the greatest water consumers are the cattle, the livestock.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, yeah. And as you mentioned earlier, by eating meat, you're eating recycled grains. Is basically what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, inefficiently recycled. There's a significant nutrient loss. For instance, you know, protein is cut by 85 to 90% of the amount of protein that goes into the cow. Mm-hmm. We only get about 10, 15% of that protein out by eating meat.
Yeah.
Our carbohydrates, almost 100% of the carbohydrates are gone. Fiber, 100% of the fiber is gone. But yet, you know, we trade it off for less desirable things. For instance, cholesterol.
Yeah.
Cholesterol goes way up. Mm-hmm. But if you had eaten the grain in the first place, there's no cholesterol in that.
No.
So,
and of course, that adds to the financial burden on the hospitals as we see today. You know, people don't know how to deal with this, the expenses with health that's mm-hmm. keep going rising constantly. And we're seeing some of these diseases that are very prominent in the Western world because of the diet. Well, we see some of that's already start creeping in China and India, which was well known in Asia for living long and having a healthy life, mm-hmm. lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yet, in God's wisdom, God knew what he would have to provide on the earth for when things become imbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the CO2 that's in the environment, the plants make use of that and will convert that, you know, CO2 into oxygen for us. So that, you know, the God designed the earth to be recycling. But because of the fact that we have this insatiable desire for meat in the diet, we have to clear out more rainforest. We have to clear out more land to produce a grazing land for these animals. And in doing so, we burn down these forests and the shrubs and produce more CO2 into the environment. Not only producing more CO2 in the environment, but the more animals that we have on the land and the earth produces that much more methane in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So we put this extra CO2 in the environment, but yet we have fewer trees, we have less vegetation there to recycle this CO2. So we have this net effect of increasing the amount of CO2 in the environment, and we're getting rid of that which would actually reduce the amount of CO2.
Another thing we want to bring, Paul, is that as I read here in Genesis 1:29-30, that God's original diet and so on with fruit, vegetables, and seeds and so on, and grains. But later on, when the entrance of sin, when Adam and Eve rebelled, we see that God then provided something, and that was actually vegetables. And when we looked at the nutritional value of vegetables today, they actually have a lot of good things in them that actually will protect us against harsh environment, toxins, and so on, so much more than the fruit. So I thought it was an interesting parallel that after sin, God provides something that will sustain us in that harsh environment that was a consequence of being rebellious and disobedient to his ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, I found that Jesus referred a lot of times in his parables using the land in his illustrations. And I like the one in the parable of the vineyard we found in Mark 12. And he spoke to him of a certain man planted a vineyard and set a hedge about it and digged a place for the wine fat and built a tower and let it out to husbandmen and went into far country. So here we have a story about this king and this master who owned this, and he planted this vineyard and he gave some to take care of it while he went away. And he was obviously going to come back. And this is illustration, of course, Jesus talks about him being the Son of God coming back, second coming. But what do you do with the thing that he has given you to be a servant of, husbandman? And later on we see here how, you know, as the season he sent to the husband a servant that he might receive from the husband of the fruit of the vineyard. So things are growing in this vineyard, he sends a servant. But what happens then? They took him and they beat him and they sent him away empty. So again, this master said, well, I'm going to send them another one, servant. And same thing. They did the same thing again. You know, they seem to mismanage. And, you know, they sent him away shamefully handled. So we see a progress here, how they treat the servants that God is sending, warnings and warnings over again. And then he sent another one, it says here. And they did what in verse 5? They killed. And they killed this person and many others, beating some and killing some. So we see a progression of these individuals who are supposed to take care of this vineyard, stooping into coming to a point where they're actually killing a servant, prophets that God sent over this time to warn them and to show them that they were supposed to be, you know, bringing a fruit. And then finally he said, surely they will listen to my son. So he sent his son to them, and they will certainly receive my son, he said, in verse 7. But those husbands said among themselves, this is their heir. Come, let us kill him, and the inheritance shall be ours. And they took him and killed him and cast him out of the vineyard. And what for therefore the Lord said of the vineyard to do? He will come and destroy the husbandmen and will give the vineyard unto others. I thought it was very interesting here. It says, the inheritance shall be ours, they said. And it's not anymore that we were supposed to be overseer what was not belong to us but to God. We will take it. And it will be ours, and we'll do whatever we please to do with it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. God says, you know, he came and would destroy the unfaithful stewards who are looking over the vineyard. That ties in exactly to what God says in Revelation 11:18, where it says, you know, I will destroy those who destroy the earth. A strong statement.
It is.
But God holds us accountable.
He does.
We may not see it now, but God holds us accountable for how we take care of things.
Well, that's why he also talks about your body being a temple of God, you know? A lot of people say, well, it doesn't matter what I do with my body. My body is my own, you know? And you don't have to interfere what I do. If I want to smoke, if I want to do this and that, but God says clearly, you are a created being, you're his. And so, you know, he even looks at the individual, but not just in our sphere of our environment, what we have influence, what we can do.
Yeah. So our time has come to a close. Just want to sum up now, Mario, in this first half hour. We've looked at some of the environmental issues and how, in actual fact, a meat consumption, a meat diet, actually has a significant, tremendous increase on the amount of greenhouse gas that we provide, that we put into our environment. And that any reduction in that would only go to help in reducing the amount of greenhouse gases and the global warming or environmental change that we encounter. And in closing, I just want to share this interesting quote that was taken from the San Francisco Chronicle. It says, the two worst things people do to the planet in their daily lives, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists, is to, number one, drive vehicles that get poor gas mileage, and number two, eat beef.
Oh my.
So these scientists realize that our greenhouse gases are caused, the two biggest causes are the, you know, the vehicles we drive, the emissions that we put into the air, but the inefficient diet we have of a meat-based diet, which contributes greatly to the amount of greenhouse gases that we produce.
Hope you've enjoyed the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word. And whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.